This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk. Hello and welcome to the first of two episodes of Market Talk for the month of May. Against a backdrop of May Day bank holidays and of course Golden Week in Japan, we'll be looking at last week's all-important US core inflation numbers and Q1 growth. We'll be chatting behind the rise in the Hang Seng Index and contrasting that with the weakness in Asian currencies. And we'll be analysing the latest conclusions of the US Federal Reserve meeting with regards to inflation and interest rates and touching on expectations for US job numbers. So hosting what's shaping up to be a busy call is me, Frances Watson, and in the investment hot seat, as usual, Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, I feel I needed to take a breath there with all the amount that's going on. It's quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, there's been loads of stuff going on. And yeah, as you say, with holidays, we were on holiday in Hong Kong yesterday, and then mainland China's on holiday the rest of the week. So they're missing out on a lot of fun.
Yeah, fun, define fun. Yeah, anyway, so look, let's just go through last week, what happened last week. We had US growth and US inflation. Of course, the two key variables that investors are absolutely watching like hawks. Do you want to give us a summary of how that feeds into the current state of affairs?
Yep, so GDP, Q1 GDP was a little light. The US annualized their number. So, everyone does it slightly differently to confuse people, but they annualized their number. It came in at 1.6%, still growth. The expectation was more like 2.5%, so it was weaker than expected. But GDP, like I said, is a bit of a black box. It's quite hard to know what is actually driving it. It can be revised significantly. I think the US economy is growing a bit better than 1.6%. Maybe last year's growth was exaggerated to the upside, and maybe this is a little bit lower than what it really is. I think if you read all the different indicators, surveys, different components, the US is still growing pretty strongly. It's fine. Inflation. So this was the PCE version. So remember, we already had CPI, which is higher than expected. And this is the thing that's undermining a little bit of confidence that the US has got inflation under control. And PCE inflation also was a little bit too hot. So it came in, the core measure, so stripping out headline stuff like the price of energy and food, all that sort of business, came in at 2.8%. It was expected to fall to 2.7, so it didn't miss by much. But the point is that it's been 4 months in a row now where the year-on-year core inflation has been 2.8 or 2.9. So it's stuck at around 3. That's what we talk about when we say sticky inflation. So I'd say growth is still fine. If anything, growth is maybe a little bit too strong. But inflation is sticky.
It's sticky. And against that backdrop, Ben, then we've got loads of Q1 earnings, haven't we? And of course, Magnificent Seven, some have announced, some haven't. I think we've got Apple later today. We're recording on the Wednesday. Can we gauge anything from the state of the consumer, from the state of corporates?
Well, I mean, on the earnings side, just full stop, just from a headline perspective, US S&P earnings, I think we spoke about it last time and it was expected to be sort of low single digits, but they always beat expectations. Well, not everyone, but on average, they do beat expectations. Usually it's sort of 4 or 5 beats to 1 miss. That's the sort of ratio. And the earnings growth is coming in right now at about 7% growth. So that's totally fine, isn't it? Earnings coming in 7%. It probably will be a bit higher than that by the time we're all done. That's the overall one, but everyone really cares about the big companies. So these Magnificent Seven, as we keep labeling them and talking about them, we've had most of those results. Apple, as you say, we've got later today. Amazon was earlier this week, which beat expectations, but came in with slightly weak guidance. I don't think you can read anything too much from that, but it was sort of a bit positive, a bit negative. The impact on the share price was sort of flattish. So after we've had Amazon and like I said, Apple today, then we've got to wait for Nvidia. We've had most of the rest. The other company which had a few headlines this week was Tesla, which is in danger of being relegated from the Magnificent Seven because it had a drawdown of about 50% from the peak last year. But it's had a nice pop this week because Elon Musk has been, he took a flight to China and he had a chat with the leadership there. And there was some reports of of getting some regulatory approval for auto driving type system. So that headline is visit to China, and the fact that maybe they're going to get some approval for something in China led to a decent pop in Tesla share price. So for now, I think they haven't quite been relegated, but they're clinging on to the Magnificent Seven at the bottom end of the table, I think.
Okay, well, let's stay with China and in current thinking. I suppose it had to happen at some stage that the Hang Seng has actually had a rally, and quite a nice one this year. What's behind that move, Ben?
Hang Seng is up nearly 20%. I got it at 19%, I think, for yesterday's close. So Wednesday's close from the lows of this year, which was sort of middle of January. So if you do the... I hate all these definitions. You know, it's like the definition of a recession is two quarters of negative growth. That's a load of rubbish. Yeah. And so is the definition of a bull market, which people say is 20% from the troughs. So, you know, Hang Seng is pretty much knocking on the door of a bull market under that definition. But you have a look at the chart. It doesn't look like a bull market to me. I'd say this is much more like a typical bear market rally because, you know, people get just too negative on something and then you can get a little pop up. What has actually changed? I mean, we had a Politburo meeting at the weekend, which I've said this very often, comes out with rhetorical support, but without any specific policy measures. So yeah, we have to wait and see, unfortunately. But I think that did help the Hang Seng a little bit. And we did have some policy easing in the form of housing market restrictions being eased. I mean, who wants a house in China at the minute? So it's pretty tough market. But, you know, they have eased some restrictions. So maybe that leads to a little bit of an increase. We're getting more details about these sort of cash for clunker type programs in China as well, where you can trade in an old refrigerator or an old car and get a new one. So maybe that helps a little bit too. But for now, I'd say it still is. For me, it feels more like a bear market rally than a real turning point. But we just got to keep our eyes on this.
Yeah. And I just wanted to talk about currencies because, of course, from China to Japan, we've had a lot of volatility in the yen, haven't we? And we've had some, rumours of buying by the BOJ, but I think more than that. And, of course, you know, the dollar keeps on going up like it does, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been quite strong this year to date, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Then currencies, some currencies, i.e. Asian currencies in particular, will have to suffer and are suffering.
Yeah. Okay, so let's break this down. So the Japan is not the only country which has had a weak currency versus the dollar. As you say, the dollar has been going up, and the main driver of that is high US yields relative to other countries, and they've been going up, haven't they, because the Federal Reserve has been sounding less dovish. They've been turning a little bit more hawkish. So, you know, there's money flowing from countries into the US dollar into buying treasuries, and therefore your currency weakens. And Japan, the Bank of Japan, has got very low interest rates. I mean, that's by design. So there's nothing you can really do to try and stop that. The issue is when the move accelerates and risks some sort of financial destabilization, I guess, if you start to see big spikes. And this week, we mentioned right at the beginning, has seen a lot of holidays across the world, but in Asia in particular. So Japan was on holiday on Monday. And we saw on Monday the currency go from the close of Friday, which is about 157 and a bit, and then it weakened all the way to 160. So in a very short period of time. And then suddenly it went from 160, which is very weak, all the way down to the strongest point of the day, which is 154.5 is what it got down to. So big moves. These are like multi-percentage point moves. Mm. As you said, most people think that was due to intervention. We'll only know when we get the proper the accounts in a few weeks' time. But it does feel as though it's intervention. But as I said, it felt as though it was about speed. And because on Monday being a holiday, It was a relatively illiquid. I think just markets moved just too aggressively. I think it's been, and just to be clear, you said the Bank of Japan intervened. So it's actually the Ministry of Finance that intervened. The Bank of Japan sets the interest rates, and then the Ministry of Finance does the they've got the currency. They speak to each other, of course, and it does. It's fairly consistent with what they both want to do. I think both institutions don't want to see an acceleration in the move. They just want to see a steady, relatively unvolatile currency.
Okay, thanks for that. Every day's a school day, Ben. For me, exactly. Anyway. So look, on the financial horizon, and let's just take a step back, because this week, just I think yesterday, wasn't it, the US Federal Reserve concluded its policy meeting. Now, again, key messages coming out of that, what were they, and does that change your overall thinking?
I was a little bit surprised at how adamant still Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, how adamant he still is that conditions are tight, monetary conditions are tight, and that the next move is for a rate cut and rate hikes are very unlikely. That's basically what he said. The statement, funnily enough, before he said all that, the statement, you could argue, was a little bit more hawkish. The statement suggested that they were getting a bit less confident that they've got inflation under control. And I mentioned earlier the stickiness in the core PCE. That makes sense to me, that they're a little bit less confident. But then during the press conference, as I said, to direct questions about whether or not a hike is possible, he said that's unlikely. No, we still think that it will be a rate cut. It's being delayed potentially by sticky inflation, but that's still what we want to do. The Federal Reserve still believes that inflation is coming down, and that maybe some of the stickiness is temporary. Transitory stickiness. I don't know. He didn't say that, but you know, we know the history of transitory and how accurate that can be. But you know, they're still confident about that, and that ultimately they expect to cut interest rates. That's the message. So on the back of that, yields, government bond yields, were a little higher on the statement. Like I said, that was a little bit hawkish, but then recovered. So yields coming down on the back of the soothing words from Jerome Powell. Problem with soothing words is that they're only so good as long as they prove accurate. We do have to see inflation come down now. We've got some important data in the next, well, tomorrow. We've got payroll reports. That's the monthly statement of how many jobs are created in the US. That's, I think, running too hot. I think the economy, that GDP data earlier this week, last week, I still think that that's a little bit too hot. So I think he is hoping that the economy does cool, or else, you know, he might be eating his words, unfortunately, again. And we'll be back into the transitory gate.
Well, and we could be heading for flaming June, couldn't we?
Something like that.
We say here in the UK, but looking forward to that actually. But look, just with the rate cut potential divergence, then if he's in hold mode and the European Central Bank goes for June, is that going to affect any divergence between US and European equities, or is that baked in already? Or
I'd say for us, the currency is obviously the big has the big impact on the rate differential. So as I mentioned before, the fact that the US has got higher interest rates means that there is money being sucked into the US. So that, all else considered, would be a weaker euro, weaker yen, weaker everything. So that's the case. But emerging market countries are much more aware of that, they don't want to see their currency weaken too much. I don't think the European Central Bank would care so much, as long as it doesn't lead to a big change in how competitive their exports are. I don't think it has a big impact. For a few months now, we've generally preferred European credit and European equities, just because a lot was already priced into the US. Everyone was confident about US growth. Everyone liked the US growth. European growth had been a bit weaker. been disappointing all last year, stagnating. But we were hoping that if the ECB starts to cut interest rates, then maybe European growth can pick up a little bit because it's being bolstered. And falls in European yields compared to US yields perhaps has already helped the European economy a little bit. We saw GDP come in at 0.3% growth this week in Eurozone. That's not annualized, to confuse everyone. You're going to multiply that by four-ish. So it's like 1.2%, something like that, which for Europe is good. And if the ECB can cut interest rates because they've got inflation under control and inflation has been coming down much more consistently than in the US, it's not as sticky as the US, then I think that could be positive for European equities and European credit. That's how we think about it anyway.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, all that brings us nicely, doesn't it, to the to your number, let's say, for the week, because we've got another of these market talks coming out at the end of May. So what's your number for this week and maybe next, and why?
Well, I've slightly contrived it because I wanted to talk about oil. And the number of the week is -5.5, which is -5.5% is what the price of Brent crude has done over the week to Wednesday's close.
Yes, saw the weakness,
It had been pretty strong all year, if you remember. It peaked up at $90 a barrel a couple of weeks ago, over $90 a barrel. This is Brent. And yesterday it closed about $83. And I do think that the price of oil, that's underestimated by many people about how important it is for financial markets, and particularly now. Because, I mean, we earlier this week we had a very weak consumer confidence print in the US. And I think Americans are very sensitive to the price of petrol, price of gasoline, filling up their cars. And when oil is high, then it costs them a lot of money and they get a little bit more depressed. And I think that does feed into consumption. You know, they're spending more money on their car. They probably spend less money on other stuff. Also, I think it feeds into inflation expectations. And remember, that is the crucial thing that we're all hoping, that the Federal Reserve can cut interest rates. They need to get inflation under control. I think falling oil price will help. Now, why has it fallen? That we had quite a punchy, a large increase in oil inventories announced yesterday, which could be so many different things. It's also very important to see what happens in the Middle East and supply issues that could occur there to settle down. But yeah, ultimately, however it happens, we would like to see oil prices fall. That will help the Fed. That will help all the sorts of things that we're talking about during this market talks.
Well, fingers crossed. Well, look, Americans may be depressed, Ben, but we're not, because we've just listened to your insights. So thanks again for all of that. And we'll be speaking, as I say, at the end of May. In the meantime, to all our UK listeners, have a lovely long bank holiday weekend. And we'll speak next time. Ben, for now, thank you. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Legal & General Investment Management Limited, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for information purposes only, and we are not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general economic, market or political issues and/or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not an offer or recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against Legal & General in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this document contains third-party information, the accuracy and completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person resident in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulation. Copyright 2024. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. In Hong Kong, this material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.